Gower said.
Follow me and do exactly as I do. What about Harris? I found him before they cut us off,
Gower said. Before she could do anything else, he was powering his suit toward the exit. She followed, the pounding of her heavy feet vibrating up through her metal legs and jarring into her body. Gower took Tahiri along another series of corridors to a spiraling stairwell. They climbed 10 floors without interruption. Concern about the stability of the stairs became a worry of a very different kind when 2 black spheres dropped from above, wailing and flashing warning lights.
Security droids!
Gower yelled. Tahiri looked up. Restricted to the stairs, the droids had dropped down the center of the stairwell shaft.
You are under arrest, they announced. You are under arrest. Drop your weapons and cease all movement.
Tahiri sent a psychokinetic pulse to knock out the nearest droid. It spun out of control, showering sparks as it rolled crazily around the stone wall before plummeting to the bottom of the stairwell. The second backed away a meter or so, its weapon arms rising threateningly. She sent a power surge through its repulsive circuits, sending it upward to a fate similar to the first. Its screams of protest faded rapidly as it disappeared into the shadows above.
Good work,
Gower said, reaching up to smash a nearby security cam.
Now, through here.
They left the stairwell 13 floors above the level of the secret command hub.
I take it you know where you're going,
Tahiri asked.
If my memory serves me correct, there should be a maintenance shaft somewhere.
Ahead of them was a 2-meter-wide cylindrical column running from floor to ceiling. Gower stepped up to it and used his suit strength to tear through the column's side. There was a hiss as his HE suit cracked down the back. His head emerged from the seam, followed by his arms. Tahiri reached around to give him a hand. Her HE suit lifted him as though he were a doll, his tail lashing in obvious relief at being freed from his confinement.
Slave your control circuits to mine before you come out, he instructed her.
She did so, and then clicked the fast release button.
Now what? She asked.
Gower pointed at the open shaft.
We climb, but first...
He reached under his suit's armpit and flicked a switch. Both suits whirred shut and turned astride quickly away, each leaving a trail of destruction as they walked through the low-ceilinged corridors.
Now that's a trail no one could miss, he said.
I should have known better. Jaina struggled to get a grip on the world around her, as suffocating folds of unconsciousness tried to drag her back down. The only signal she received from her body was that of a burning sensation between her shoulder blades, where she'd been shot. She suspected that she hadn't been seriously hurt, but the blaster's stun setting had been on the high side, and her nervous system was still a bit scrambled. When the darkness finally began to recede, and she managed to haul herself out into daylight, she couldn't tell if weeks or minutes had passed. Moaning, she tried to move, but found that Salkili had bound her arms and legs tightly together. There was a translucent hood over her head, too.
I see you're awake,
she heard him say from close by, his voice raised over the steady whining of his landspeeder's motor. Where are you taking me? She asked.
To meet someone.
Who?
It's not important. He has money, and that's all that concerns me right now.
You betrayed them, she said disgustedly.
Do you mean freedom?
You sold them out.
They did it to themselves. I mean, what do they expect? You go up against the big cannons. You have to expect to get shot.
But you were the one pulling the trigger.
Better that than be on the receiving end. Besides, if they hadn't caused so much trouble, this might never have happened.
So they were getting close to someone?
You really think you're going to get any information out of me?
He laughed.
I don't think so, Jedi.
She tried again to use the Force, and this time felt a flicker of response. She clutched at it, as though it were a life raft. You could just release me, she said, putting as much persuasion as possible behind the words.
I'm of no importance.
You're right, he said. So I might as well shoot you now and be done with it.
She heard him pull the blaster from its holster. No, wait! The bolt took her in the shoulder, hurling her again into darkness. Jaina's eyes opened to bright light. Where am I? She croaked, squinting around as she tried to sit up. She appeared to be in a study of some kind, although the details were still hazy.
Welcome back, Jaina.
She turned slightly in the direction of the voice and made out a vague, green-faced blur standing by what appeared to be a door.
Salkeeli, you treacherous little...
It's not there,
someone else said when her hand crept down to her side in search of her lightsaber. The voice was familiar, but a name didn't immediately spring to mind.
It's all right. No harm will come to you. If you behave yourself, that is.
She felt naked without her lightsaber, especially in such a weakened state. Her eyes were only slowly remembering how to focus. Her lightsaber wasn't all that was missing either. Her comlink was gone, along with everything else that might have enabled her to call for help. And she had been moved to a different location. She had no idea where she was. She forced herself to sit up straighter, turning to face the second person. He, too, was just a blur. Salkeeli said someone wanted to talk to me, she said. I presume that someone is you? Whoever he was... He was seated behind a wide desk and dressed in richly red garments.
You presume correctly.
So where exactly am I? She asked again.
You are in my private chambers, the man answered. These rooms are soundproofed and protected against all forms of electronic infiltration. The door is blastproof, and its lock can only be opened by my thumbprint.
Her depth of field was gradually returning, allowing her to make out the person sitting behind the desk. Long-boned and sharp-eyed, Deputy Prime Minister Blaine Harris looked at her with a questioning look on his face.
Well, he asked, arms outstretched imploringly, will you cooperate?
She kept her surprise carefully in check. That all depends.
On?
On what you plan to do with me, she answered, and also what you did with the credits. He frowned deeply.
Credits? What credits?
The credits you've been siphoning from the Bakura treasury, she said, taking a gamble on a plausible theory.
Ah, yes.
Harris nodded his understanding.
Salkeeli told me something about your little theory. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Freedom fail to pin anything on me?
Yes, but I'm sure Viram would have if he'd been given the chance.
I very much doubt that.
Harris steepled his fingers in front of him, smiling thinly behind them.
You see, it really wasn't me who stole those credits.
Jaina's eyes narrowed, scrutinizing the Deputy Prime Minister for any hint of duplicity. No matter how hard she looked, she couldn't find anything. Nevertheless, she didn't believe him. You're up to something, she said finally. I know it.
Oh, I'm not denying that for a second, he said with a laugh. It's just not what you think.
Harris pressed a control on his desk, and a section of the office wall slid to one side. The space behind it contained a holo projector 3 meters across. The Deputy Prime Minister stood up to gain a better vantage point, as an image came to life within it. Jaina recognized it from her approach path to Salus Dar. A massive amphitheater whose walls were bedecked with multicolored streamers and pennants bearing the Puek and Bakuran emblems.
The ceremony, Jaina said.
Blaine Harris nodded.
It'll be underway within the hour.
You're going to try to stop it.
Don't be a fool, girl,
he said with obvious contempt, and then turned back to the image.
My intentions are far more complex than that.
In the hollow, a squad of Puek guards appeared.
They're keeping tight-lipped about the ceremony,
Harris went on thoughtfully, still staring at the events unfolding.
I guess that's their prerogative. It's a privilege for us to be part of it.
You really believe in this stuff? Jaina asked. Harris found this amusing. Of course I don't believe in it, but the Puek do, and that's enough for me. He turned back to Jaina. Have you ever noticed the similarities between the Sea Rook and the Yuuzhan Vong? Both cultures are xenophobic, stratified, religious, and expansionist. Both express their tendencies in violent methodologies. Both are, or have been, potent enemies of the New Republic. Both the Sea Rook and the Yuuzhan Vong use defeated foes as slaves. An ugly practice that I am pleased to see the Puek abandon. That's one of two ways they've learned from their old masters. The second being, no more xenophobia, he said, as though stating the obvious. I'm hoping we can make it three ways. By allowing them their ritual, they might also learn to turn their religion into a non-violent activity. Then we'll work on their caste system and see if we can't make the slave mentality a little more flexible. Acceptance, you see, can be as effective a tool for change as domination and force. She frowned, understanding what he was saying but not getting the context. I'm sorry, but I think I'm missing the point you're trying to make. My point, Jaina, is that we don't need the New Republic telling us what to do here on Bakura. But we're not here to do that, she protested. We're just trying to make sure that everything is okay with... Really? He cut in. I find that very hard to believe. On the eve of our greatest moment, alliance with the heirs of our old enemy, you turn up to sow the seeds of dissent. Coincidence? I don't think so. Wait a minute. We were called to Bakura by someone who was concerned that something bad was going on. And who was that exactly? She glanced away. He snorted. If there's one thing I learned in the military, it's that an ill-informed informant can do more damage than a convincing double agent. The only way to be certain of anything, my dear girl, is to see it with your own eyes. And even then... He turned back to the projection, sentence unfinished. When he spoke again, his tone was softer. The subject changed. I never thought I'd see this day. After all the years of fear and doubt, Bakura has finally found a means to become what we have always wanted it to be. Independent and safe. From this day forward, Bakura will be a world in its own right. Not one shackled to the Empire, or the Republic, or the Sea Rook. With the Puek, we can forge a new alliance. An alliance of our own choosing, not one forced upon us by circumstance. Peace will never again be ripped out from under us by powers from afar. It is time for us to be strong at last. A buzzing sound came from the door. Harris glanced at Salkili, who straightened and raised his blaster. It would seem that the reinforcements have arrived. Quite unintentionally, I might add, but still. He gestured to Salkili, and the Rodian crossed the room to take Jaina by the arm, pressing the blaster into her side. She decided to play along for the moment. Salkili walked her to a position in the corner of the room, out of sight of the door. He raised the blaster to her neck, pushing it firmly under her chin as he clamped one leathery hand over her mouth. The double door slid open with a hiss, and three people entered in a rush. Jaina didn't recognize them at first. They were hooded and cloaked. But she could tell that it wasn't her parents and Tahiri. It wasn't until the door shut behind them, and the one in front turned to face Harris, that Jaina saw who it was. "We're in trouble," Malinza Thanas said. The others pulled back their hoods, revealing Yorg and Virum. Harris looked concerned. "What happened to Zell?" "He was shot when we fled the stack," Malinza said. Her voice caught somewhere between anger and tears. "We've lost Salkili, too. I'm worried that..."
"You should know that I'd never let myself be caught or killed, Malinza," the Rodian said, stepping out from where he'd kept himself hidden and dragging Jaina with him. "But I guess you didn't know me that well, did you?"
Malinza turned, her look of surprise deepening when she saw Jaina.
I don't understand."
"That is becoming increasingly obvious," Harris said, producing a blaster of his own from beneath his scarlet robe. "Your weapon's on the floor, if you would be so kind." Malenza's face was pale as she dropped her small blaster onto the rug in front of her. Yorg obeyed with a snarl, while Viram calmly complied, keeping his thoughts to himself. "What do you intend to do?" Malenza asked, fighting even harder now to keep her emotions in check.
"Do!"
Harris waved Salkeeli forward, and the Rodian pushed Jaina over to the others.
"The job you set out to do, of course. Why else would I have funded you, Malenza, if our goals weren't the same in the first place? I'm going to unite the people against the Galactic Alliance."
He smiled coldly. "The only real difference between your plans and my own is that, when mine come to fruition, the people of Bakura will be united behind me, not you. Which is a shame, really, because it will be your tragic death that finally mobilizes them. That, and the terrible betrayal of the Jedi who came to enslave us once again."
"What?"
asked Malenza and Jaina at the same time.
"All will be made clear in due course, I assure you. Now, Salkeeli, if you could bind their hands, please."
Malenza glared at Salkeeli as she started to put the binders around her wrists.
"We trusted you,"
she hissed.
"If it makes you feel any better, Malenza, it'll probably be the last mistake you're ever going to make."
"Malenza, no!" Jaina called out when she saw the girl noticeably stiffen. But it was too late. Not waiting for the binders to snap shut and tighten about her wrists, Malenza pushed Salkeeli's hands aside and brought her knee up into his groin. As he jackknifed forward, she clubbed him to the ground. Barely had the look of surprise begun to form on his face when Yorg was moving forward also. The long-limbed blonde lunged across the room, her strong thighs propelling her forward, reaching for Harris's gun. He didn't even move, except to pull the trigger. A single shot rang out, and Yorg hit the floor with a sickening thud. Then the blaster was on Jaina.
"Whatever you're thinking," Harris said softly, "I advise against it."
Malenza backed away, mouth open in horror as she stared at Yorg's limp body. Salkeeli had climbed back to his feet, looking a little gray. Stepping up close to Malenza, he snarled,
"Don't ever try that again."
He fastened the binders then, and Jaina saw Malenza wince as he set them to tighten around the girl's wrists, obviously tighter than they needed to be.
"This actually works out well for me," Harris said, as Salkeeli bound Viram next. "You saved me the trouble of trying to decide which one of you to shoot."
Jaina held out her hands when it was her turn for the binders. As Salkeeli reached around her wrists to seal the Durasteel binders, she slid a simple thought into his mind. The click of the binders locking. She reinforced it with a wince similar to Malenza's, as though they were pinching her skin. Salkeeli leered at her as he stepped back, confident that all of the captives were now effectively bound. Jaina smiled back at him defiantly. The binders were tight around her wrists, but not locked. Salkeeli produced his blaster and took his place beside Harris. Malenza glowered at him, eyes filled with hate, while Harris stopped to check the growing crowd in the holoprojector before switching it off and closing the panel.
"Within the hour, this planet will be a consecrated part of the Puek Emancipation Movement, and you, my dear Malenza, will be a martyr to your cause. Doesn't that fill you with pride?"
Malenza spat on the carpet at his feet.
"Spoken like a true rebel."
Harris faced his accomplice then.
"Salkeeli, in position, please."
The Rodian ushered his three prisoners closer to the door, and Harris opened it with his thumbprint. Jaina, Malenza, and Viram filed outside with the blaster pointed at their backs.
"Where are you taking us?"
Malenza asked.
"Wait and see," Harris said. "I guarantee you won't be disappointed."
Jag had taken twin sons out to patrol the edges of Salonia's orbit, wary of any unauthorized activity, while attention below was focused on the impending ceremony. Both Puek and Bukuran contingents were quiet. The two big alien assault carriers, Erinunka and Farinri, orbiting in quadrants diametrically opposed to the two local defenders, Defender and Sentinel. Jack took his claw craft and his two wingmates in a wide arc around Salonia. The voice of the comm operator on Salonia suddenly cut across his thoughts.
Launch is detected.
I'm on it, Jack said, quickly swinging his claw craft in the direction of the numerous vessels his sensors detected emerging from Sentinel's launching bays. His wingmates were close behind him, following him in for a closer look. Has Bakuran Defense Fleet advised us of the launches? He asked. The number of ships leaving the cruiser was already up to 20 and still rising.
As far as they're concerned, I don't think they feel they have to, but I'll check with them anyway.
Jag was already close enough to pick out the types of craft emerging from the launching bays, but this only confused him. It was a mixed bag, consisting of Y and X-Wings from the Bakuran Defense Forces, along with an equal number of C-Ruvi, Puek, he reminded himself, Swarm-class droid fighters.
Apparently it's an honor guard,
came back Salonia's operator.
I've notified Captain Main.
Honor guard? It was plausible enough, Jag supposed. But it still troubled him. The number of ships was approaching 50. Far too many for the depleted Twin Suns to tackle on its own, especially if it was caught off guard. Jag picked a flight of three ships, two of them droid fighters, and tailed them around the planet. The trio didn't react to his presence, but a transmission from Salonia not long after confirmed that they'd been noticed.
They're requesting we stay well clear,
came Captain Main over the open channel.
I informed them that we would happily comply, but that we would have to take the necessary steps to ensure our security.
Jag smiled tightly to himself. What Main was saying was that, short of Jag provoking an altercation, he had a free hand to do whatever he felt necessary. With this in mind, he continued to shadow the trio of fighters. The total number of ships in the Honor Guard had just reached an even 100, and it was still climbing. Leia followed an usher to their seats, accompanied by Han, C-3PO, and her two Nogri bodyguards. The stadium was enormous, practically a giant crater, lined with stalls, with the more comfortable booths higher up, affording the more privileged guests a better view of the proceedings that would soon be taking place in the stadium center. The Prime Minister had still to appear, and after the early morning meeting, he would no doubt be avoiding the Galactic Alliance when he did. 50 Puek soldiers maintained a perfect ring around the area on which the ceremony was to take place, well away from the nearest seats in the center of the stadium.
Do you think the rain's going to hold off? Han asked.
Dense clouds were building on the western horizon, promising a tropical storm.
If it doesn't, Leia said, then I guess we're going to get wet.
A fanfare sounded as they took their seats, announcing the formal arrival of the Bakuran and Puek leaders. Prime Minister Kundertal, dressed in a magnificent purple robe, and the Kiramak, led a large group of human, Kurtzan, and Puek officials in a cleared path from the base of the stadium to the central ring.
My people, Kundertal began, his voice magnified a thousandfold by speakers floating high above the stadium. Welcome to you all on this magnificent occasion. With our new allies, the Puek, we join together to usher in a new era of prosperity and peace. Today, Bakura achieves its destiny, free from fear of old enemies and working with new allies to build a common future.
The crowd responded with equal parts cheers and boos as he stepped back to allow the Kiramak to speak. The powerful tones that issued from its throat boomed deafeningly across the stadium. People of Bakura, came the translation when it had finished its address. I am proud to be here as the leader of a liberated people. The Puek species, no longer bound to an oppressive regime rooted in cruelty and bloodshed, joins with you in spiritual communion as our two great nations create a bond that will run much deeper than mere friendship. With the signing of the treaty, we will be one, our fates forever linked. The response from the crowd was as mixed as it had been for Kundertal, but it didn't seem to faze either leader. Puek priests, bedecked with streamers, began warbling some monotonous chant as the Kiramak prowled the edges of the cleared space, scattering glinting shards in a perfect circle around the alien contingent. Every few seconds, in counterpoint to the chanting, the Kiramak would raise its head and intone a phrase in its own tongue. Han muttered,
"How much more of this is there?"
"The ceremony is scheduled to last 1 hour, sir."
"That's just great."
Han stretched his legs in front of him and locked his hands behind his head.
"Wake me when it's over, will you, Leia?"
The floating van pulled up outside an unguarded entrance to the stadium. Gower, at the controls of the air car following the van, drove past, rounded a corner, and came to a halt. Tahiri was the first to climb out, running back to the corner. Gower was close behind. Once there, the two of them cautiously peered around, just in time to see Blaine Harris lead Jaina, Melinza Thanas, and two others into the stadium.
"So much for security," Tahiri muttered, over the sound of chanting coming from speakers within the stadium.
"There's no one at the gates. They just walked right in."
"I suspect it was arranged that way."
Lorin's tail brushed rhythmically against her legs.
"And if we're quick enough, we might be able to take advantage of the situation, too."
Together, they approached the entrance, their pace hurried but wary, aware that at any moment alarms might start to ring out. In the end, they managed to reach the gateway without incident and slip inside undetected.
"Can you sense your friend?" Gower asked.
Jaina's mind had been shining like a beacon since well before she'd left Blaine Harris's office, just minutes after Tahiri and Gower had arrived. While she and the Rin had been trying to convince a security guard to let them in to see the Deputy Prime Minister, Tahiri had detected that Jaina was on the move. Retreating from the ministerial offices, Tahiri and Gower had found the droid interface, via which the Rin had been able to determine from security cam images that Harris was moving with Jaina. Although they had no idea of where exactly the Deputy Prime Minister was taking Jaina, they'd set out in pursuit, with Tahiri beginning to despair of being able to reach Harris in time to stop the ceremony.
"Well?" Gower asked.
Tahiri nodded. "Yeah, I can sense her all right."
Then together, they padded silently down the corridors, following Jaina's presence deep into the bowels of the stadium.
"Where are you taking us?" Jaina demanded.
Harris, a few paces ahead, ignored her. Salkeeli gave her a shove in the shoulder from behind with the butt of his weapon. A short time later, they stopped before a sealed door that looked big enough to drive a landspeeder through. It opened when Blaine Harris keyed a long sequence into the lock.
"Move,"
he ordered curtly, waving her and the surviving members of Freedom ahead of him. Jaina found herself in an equipment locker, empty except for a single metal container in the center of the room. Harris closed the door and strode over to stand beside Jaina.
"Take a look at the box. Tell me what you see."
Jaina squatted to take a closer look, carefully maintaining the pretense that her wrists were still securely bound.
"A remote detonator."
"Very good," said Harris. "Now press the red button."
She laughed humorlessly.
"You can't be."
"Do it,"
Harris insisted, raising his weapon and pressing it to Melinza's forehead.
"Do it, or I shoot the girl."
"Okay,"
Jaina said, reaching out with her seemingly bound hands and depressing the button. A numeric timer came to life, counting down from 10 standard minutes. Harris nodded in satisfaction, lowering the blaster to his side.
"And now that your fingerprints are on the button, your fate is effectively sealed. Once you're dead and the bomb goes off, there'll be no one to plead in your defense."
"You know," Jaina said, standing.
"Blowing up the stadium isn't going to help relations with the Puek."
"If that was my intention," he said, "then yes, I have no doubt that such an action would seriously compromise relations with the Puek. But it's not. Well, not the entire stadium anyway.
Just the part where my enemies are seated. Prime Minister Kundertal?
Then, with the terrible realization spreading through her, she said,
My parents?
Yes, my dear. What will become evident when the pieces are put together is that you planted the bomb to derail the treaty with the Puek. The Jedi didn't want Bakura to leave the Galactic Alliance, and they were prepared to stop at nothing to prevent this from happening. Your parents, unfortunately, were simply necessary sacrifices to the cause. Thinking that you were helping her, Malenza Thanas was convinced by you to kidnap me and force your way into the stadium, where a bomb awaited. But, just in time, your evil plans were discovered by the misguided but loyal young Malenza who, at the cost of her own life and the lives of her friends, helped release me. Alas, not in time to prevent the detonation of the bomb. The Prime Minister will be killed, along with much of the Senate. Leia watched with interest as the Puek priests added a swaying, fluid dance to their weird chant. The Kyrmak had completed the circle and was addressing the sky above, opening its arms as if to encompass the entire world.
Remind me again why we had to be here, Han whispered.
Leia shushed him. Leia couldn't help feeling a growing edginess as the ceremony built in intensity. The chanting had reached an almost fever pitch. The crowd was utterly silent now. Even Han abandoned all pretense of disinterest, leaning forward as though hypnotized by the swaying, singing aliens. Then suddenly, a stab of urgency cut through Leia. She didn't know where it was coming from at first, until she identified its source as the Force, and from outside her. Han, she whispered, then louder to be heard over the Puek. Han, it's Jaina. He instantly snapped upright in his seat.
Where?
He asked, looking vaguely into the crowd in search of his daughter.
She's not here. Leia struggled to interpret what she was feeling.
She's calling to me through the Force. She's trying to warn us. She shook her head, unable to get a proper reading on the message.
Something's about to happen.
Leia closed her eyes to sort out a mad tumble of wordless impressions. Images she couldn't interpret flooded into her on a tide of growing urgency. Han, I think we need to get out of here. Quickly! Han rose to his feet immediately. With Cockman and Meowal gathered close around Leia, he started to lead the way out of the stadium. They reached the edge of the prestige stand unmolested.
What's going on, Leia? Han asked. Where is she?
She's near here. I don't want to distract her, Han. She's...
A near-perfect image formed in her mind. Explosives. A timer. Seconds decreasing rapidly in number.
It's coming! She gasped. We have to get down! Run! Everyone, run!
Then, another desperate image from Jaina, so clear it formed words in her mind.
Tahiri!
No! The world turned white, and her connection to Jaina instantly went dead. Despair was a feeling Jaina had never succumbed to, not entirely, but frustration was a completely different story. She had tried twice to distract Salkeeli, but the Rodian was watching her far too closely. Then she felt a touch through the Force that was at the same time familiar and strikingly unfamiliar. Tahiri was nearby and coming closer. Unaware of the subtle life energies flowing around him, Harris had produced Jaina's lightsaber from the folds of his robe and triumphantly activated the shining blade.
There remains only one thing to do to make the story watertight, he said. If the Jedi really are to be the enemy, our hero needs some realistic wounds, don't you think?
Salkeeli grinned as Harris approached Malenza. Jaina couldn't wait any longer. If she was going to act, then she needed to do it now. A swift outward movement of her arms got rid of the binders, and one solid Force push knocked the lightsaber out of Harris's hands, and she called it to her own. She duck-rolled as Salkeeli brought his blaster to bear on her. his eyes widening in surprise at the abrupt turn of events. She kicked the Rhodian's legs from beneath him. Harris wasted no time getting his own blaster out, but Jaina was on her feet in time to deflect his first two shots, directing them harmlessly into the wall. Another two bolts hissed by, exploding loudly somewhere behind her. Then, with three quick steps, she lunged at the Deputy Prime Minister, clubbing him with the hand grip of her lightsaber. He collapsed back against the wall, a look of startled annoyance frozen on his face as he slumped to the floor. Confident that there was no longer any threat from Harris, she turned her attention back to Sal Keeley. Melinza, however, had already taken care of him. The girl had him pinned to the ground with one arm twisted up behind his back. Jaina nodded, impressed. "Well done," she said. Then, with dismay, she saw the ruin of the remote detonator. One of the stray blaster bolts had struck it square in the top casing. Jaina thought frantically, "How much longer did we have on the timer?" Viram shook his head.
"I have no idea."
"You've lost, Jedi," Sal Keeley cackled.
"Not yet we haven't," Melinza said, grabbing him under the chin.
"Tell me where the bomb is, and tell me now." "Not that you can do anything to stop it now anyway. But it's under the premium stalls, tucked safely away behind a ferrocrete support."
"But it still doesn't help us," Melinza said, "because we're trapped in here." Jaina hurried across the room to where the Rhodian lay pinned by Melinza. A quick search of his pockets, and she soon found what she was looking for, her comlink.
"Tahiri, can you hear me?"
A second's pause before,
"Jaina, we're right here outside the door."
"I know. Can you get it open, though?"
"The code sequence might take a minute or two to get through, but yes, we should be able to get you out."
"We don't have a minute or two, Tahiri. Listen, there's a bomb. You have to get to it and defuse it."
"Where is it?"
Jaina repeated the information that Sal Keeley had given her.
"Okay. Gower's going to stay here and try to get the door open."
"Who's Gower?"
"He's the Rin who's been helping us. You can trust him."
"Don't worry about us. We're probably safer in here than you are. Just get going." Jaina sensed Tahiri hurrying away up the corridor, using the Force to maximize her speed. Jaina turned away from the door and squatted down next to the squirming Sal Keeley, still futilely trying to break free. "How do I disarm the bomb, Sal Keeley?"
"How should I know?"
he growled. "I'll try again," she said, this time with some Force persuasion behind it. "How do I disarm the bomb?" His eyes glazed over slightly as he said,
"It can't be deactivated now."
That threw her for a moment.
"There has to be a way."
She pushed even harder with the Force.
"The remote detonator,"
he answered without resistance. Then, glancing over to the ruined box, he smiled nastily.
"But like I said, there's no way to disarm it now."
Jaina cursed under her breath.
"I'm almost there,"
Tahiri said over the comlink, her voice crackling through dozens of meters of durasteel and ferrocrete.
"Do you have the information?"
"Tahiri, I don't think it can be disarmed."
"There has to be a way, Jaina."
"There isn't. I've seen devices like these before."
"Then what are we going to do?"
"We try to warn Mom and Dad and get them to alert Kundertal. If we're quick enough, they might be able to clear the stand and get everyone away before..."
"How much time do we have?"
"I still don't know, Tahiri, but not much. So get out of there as quickly as possible, okay?" She tried to raise her mother on the comlink, but there was no answer. Instead, she reached out through the Force.
"Mom, you have to get out of there. There's a bomb."
"I found it,"
Tahiri said.
"I have the bomb right here in front of me."
Jaina's anxiety doubled.
"What are you still doing there, Tahiri? I told you to get out."
"I'm going to try to disarm it."
Jaina reached out with all her strength and tried to force meld with Tahiri. The link was faint, but she did receive a brief clear view through Tahiri's eyes. The bomb in front of her was not equipped for manual disarming, but it did have a timer. In bold blue digits, Jaina could see they had 70 seconds left. 69. Then, something cold and dark pushed her away and the link ebbed. The locker door hissed open, and the Rin called Gower rushed in, his tail straight out behind him.
What's going on?
Get that door shut,
she told him sharply. Sparks flashed, and Jaina received the sharp tang of burning wires through the force. At the same time, she felt the equally sharp stab of hopelessness, as Tahiri realized she didn't have a clue what to do next.
Tahiri,
you've got to get out of there, Jaina yelled into the comlink.
No, there has to be a way.
There isn't. Now move.
You don't trust me, do you, Jaina?
You don't have to prove anything to me, Tahiri. Please, just...
I can do it. I know I can.
Can we argue about this later, Tahiri? But again, something dark and powerful overtook her, its presence casting a black shape in Jaina's mind.
Munmareshu Kamasami.
The words cut into Jaina like a jagged blade.
Tahiri! No!
Tahiri cried, her desperation shattering the fragile darkness.
Leave me alone! Deroik Vong Prat!
It was a Yuuzhan Vong battle cry. Raina? Jaina asked. The voice changed to basic with uncanny ease.
Anakin killed me, and now you want me dead too. I won't let that happen. Krell Nag Shnirishvek.
Wait, Raina! It was too late. Time had run out. The bomb went off with a muffled concussion that Jaina felt rather than heard. The floor bucked beneath her, throwing everyone to the ground. The lights went out. Someone screamed. Jaina collected herself when the shaking died down. She frantically reached out into the darkness for Tahiri. No matter how she tried, she couldn't find her anywhere. Tahiri was gone. Mom? Mom! In the aftermath of the explosion, Jaina's mind was filled with psychic pain. She sat up in the gloom of the room's emergency lighting and collected the comlink from the floor where she dropped it. She quickly activated it. Mom! She opened the locker door to reduce the interference. Mom, can you hear me? It took a few moments before Leia answered.
I hear you, Jaina.
Relief rushed through her at the sound of her mother's voice.
Are you all right?
I'm okay, but Mom, Tahiri...
I know, I felt it too.
How bad is it up there, Mom?
It's utter chaos. The blast took out the Prime Minister's stalls. Security is trying to clear the area now.
Jaina caught flashes from her mother. Frightened faces, tangled wreckage, and blood. Lots of blood.
What do we do now?
Viram asked, stepping up to Jaina. We go topside to help. She answered.
I'll go,
Malinza said. Jaina shook her head. They might not believe you.
No, the girl said, but they will listen.
Then I can stay here and keep an eye on these two if you like, Viram said.
Jaina thought about this for a moment, then nodded.
Okay, and I'll back you up when I get there.
Wait a minute, Gower said. Where are you going?
To find Tahiri.
Then I'm coming too, he said.
Jaina shrugged helplessly and let him follow her out as they retraced Tahiri's steps through the damaged corridors, updating Leia as they went. At the heart of the destruction, they found a clear space about 2 meters across. The blast had destroyed everything around the area, but nothing within it. And there, at its center, lay Tahiri, curled up like a child hiding from a nightmare. Jaina tried reaching for the girl through the force, but she still couldn't find her.
What happened here?
Gower asked. She must have put a force bubble around herself, Jaina said. It must have closed when she passed out. Gower moved to the girl's side and rolled her over. The Rin felt for a pulse in her throat when there was no response.
She's alive.
Jaina tried to reach her through the force one more time.
Tahiri...
Nothing. Jaina had never felt anyone so empty before. The girl felt hollow in the force. Almost. She stopped the thought, not wanting to introduce the idea into her mind. But it was too late. Almost invisible, she thought. Like the Yuuzhan Vong. Jaina's comlink beeped.
Jaina?
Her mother's voice came again over the comlink. Yes, Mom.
Rescue teams have reached the epicenter of the blast.
Looking up, she could see movement through the hole. We're directly below. Are you with them?
Yes. They've started pulling bodies out of the rubble.
How many? Jaina asked.
4 so far. And...
Leia's hesitation told her there was worse to come. What is it, Mom?
It's Prime Minister Kundertal. He's dead.
Reports were garbled from below, but the sense of disaster was all too vivid for Jag's liking. 2 senators were dead, along with 6 guards and a couple of guests. 40 more had incurred wounds, with injuries ranging from hearing loss to loss of limbs. And of course, there was Kundertal himself. Jaina's reappearance had brought some comfort, briefly. She had only confirmed everyone's worst fears. Blaine Harris had set the bomb, hoping to incriminate the Galactic Alliance and make a martyr out of Melinza Finesse, as well as getting Kundertal out of the way. On the heels of that thought came an announcement from Pride of Salonia.
We've just had word from Sentinel,
Captain Main said.
General Panib has declared martial law. He's requested that, no matter what happens, we don't take any direct action.
What do you want us to do? Jag asked Main.
Just back off a little. This is a touchy time. Whatever this honor guard is really about, we're just going to have to lead them to it for a while.
Understood. He relayed the order to his pilots and changed the vector of his own wing, letting the trio they'd been following drift slowly away. As soon as Tahiri was strapped safely onto a repulsor gurney, Gower joined the rescue effort. Han raised an eyebrow at the sight of the Rin, but was too grateful for the extra set of hands to question his presence. Beneath a foreboding sky, darkened further by a thick pall of smoke hanging over the stadium, the Poet bodyguards had tightened their ranks around the Kiramak. Jaina had barely had the chance to do more than hug her mother and father in relief at seeing them again. It was only later, when medical reinforcements arrived, that she had time to actually step back and take a proper look at the world around her. The survivors had a shocked look in their eyes, even those who helped in the rescue. No one paid any mind to the thunderstorm that was brewing overhead. It seemed almost irrelevant in the face of what had happened. But there was something else that wasn't as easy to ignore. A sound that nagged at her from below the rumbling of the crowd. It was a strange and haunting wail, a ululation that seemed in search of a note of despair, but couldn't quite find it. Her father looked up, frowning. You hear that, Leia? Leia turned in disbelief. They've started again. Jaina followed her gaze to the heart of the stadium. Sure enough, the ceremony had recommenced. She could see lithe reptilian aliens dancing in a circle, and one multicolored shape prowling the center, uttering noises that sounded like the angry song of some mighty bird. I don't understand, she said. Why would the Kiramak finish it now, when it would obviously be safer later? Jaina remembered what Harris had said earlier about the similarities between the Si Rook and the Yuuzhan Vong. The warriors of the Yuuzhan Vong wouldn't consider going into battle without making appropriate sacrifices to Yun Yamka. The Si Rook, in turn, were loath to risk their souls in a world that hadn't been consecrated. Perhaps the sudden carnage around them made them want to get the ceremony finished as quickly as possible, just in case more attacks were to follow. Jaina's thoughts were distracted when the sound of engines whining joined the chanting. It was growing steadily louder. Jaina looked around, then up. Emerging smoothly from the clouds were 3 Dakii-class Puek troop ships. Reinforcements? Han asked of no one in particular. A quick getaway, perhaps, Jaina suggested. They might be keen enough to consecrate in the middle of all this, but I doubt they'd want to stick around afterward. You could be right, honey, her father said. The alien vessels rotated in midair when they were over the stadium and descended at a safe distance from the ring of Puek guards.
Excuse me, mistress,
C-3PO said.
Look,
Han said, shouting over the growing din.
Three more!
Another trio of ships was descending beyond the stadium walls, the same type of troop ship as those that had just landed.
If I might interrupt, mistress,
3PO tried again, gesticulating off to one side. Suddenly, the engines from all three of the ships in the stadium below cut out, allowing a relative quiet to settle around the area. For a moment, everything was still. Then, with one eye on what was taking place with the Puek, Jaina leaned toward C-3PO and muttered,
What was that you just said, 3PO?
The ceremony is complete, mistress,
the golden droid said.
Thanks, Goldenrod, Han said. But that seems pretty obvious from where I'm standing.
But, sir, I've been trying to explain that the ceremony required the Kiramak to give Bakura a new name. Jui.
Leia faced him fully now. Did he happen to mention this fact to the Bakurans before he did it?
I doubt that very much, mistress. You see, the Kiramak has also dedicated Jui to the Sebru, the Imperium.
3PO, are you sure about this? Leia asked.
Oh, quite certain.
Rain began to fall in great sheets across the stadium as the sides of the troop ships opened, issuing ramps. Jaina squinted to see through the rain, trying to make out what lay inside. Dull brown paint was falling away in the rain, revealing golden scales, the sign of the C-Ruvi priest caste. Realization struck Jaina like a physical blow. Of course. The treaty with the Puek was a smokescreen for the real tactic. Once Bakura belonged to the Sea-Rook, once it was consecrated, they could advance on it in force.
This can't be good, Han said,
as columns of russet-scaled Sea-Ruvi warriors began marching out of the nearest troopship. Jag's frustration immediately increased when, at the peak of the consecration ceremony, the feed from the ground dissolved in a burst of static. Saloni, I seem to have a communications outage. Anything coming through from your end?
Negative, Twin One,
came the reply, distorted but comprehensible. Jag waited anxiously, with only the persistent static to listen to. Then, amid the crackly hissing, he heard another noise. It was like a wailing, constantly fading in and out. It was unsettling, both haunting and hypnotic at the same time.
I have launches.
The voice of one of his pilots jolted him out of his reverie. A quick glance at his board confirmed the report. The nearest of the two Puek carriers, Erinun Ka, was disgorging dozens of smaller vessels into the space around it. His computer instantly recognized and marked the familiar droid fighters. But that proved to be only half the complement of the new ships. Twin Sons, full alert. Salonia, are you registering this?
We have it on our scopes now. Trying to raise General Panetta. Communications are out down there.
The transmission dissolved into static again. The voice returned briefly with...
It could be jammed somehow. Be on alert.
The signal vanished beneath a howl of rising interference. Clicking his wingmates, Jag brought his claw craft around to match vectors with the nearest trio of Honor Guard fighters. Two droid ships flanked a Bakuran Y-wing in perfect synchrony, shadowing its every move as it swept around the planet. He scanned the formation for energy emissions and soon discovered that shadowing was as far from the truth as it could get. The two droid ships had powerful tractor beams locked on the Y-wing and were forcing it to go where they wanted it. He plotted its course. In two orbits, it would intersect with the carrier Ferinri. A cold chill ran through him. The droid ships were kidnapping the pilot. A quick scan confirmed that the same was true of all the other Honor Guard flights. There was no way he could warn Twin Sons Salonia or General Panib. He could only hope that the others would understand his actions and follow his lead. Arming his forward batteries, he thrust hard to cut off the droid fighters. A burst from his blaster cannon skittered off shields that were tougher than he'd expected. It weakened them slightly, but there was certainly no penetration. As soon as he'd swept past, one of them broke away to give chase. The first of his wingmates, Twin Six, met it with a hail of laser fire that forced it to change course. It ducked away, although not before sending a spray of energy at Twin Three as it did. The second droid ship and its unwilling charge were making a break for it, abandoning all pretense of cooperation and changing course. Instead of arcing gradually around the planet, the pair headed directly for Ferinri. The masquerade was over. There was no longer any mistaking the honor guard for what it was. Jag lined up behind the fleeing droid fighter and sent a volley of lasers through its weakened shields, quickly reducing it into space dust. The liberated Y-Wing instantly changed course, wiggling on its long axis in what Jag took as a gesture of thanks. By then, his tactical scopes were full of new targets. Seeing one of his squadron's X-Wings trying to shake off the Vasset fighter riding its tail, Jag set off in pursuit. He got a lock on the fighter as it dog-tailed after the X-Wing, and he fired when he thought he had a reasonable aim. But the fighter suddenly banked left after the X-Wing, and the shot went wide. Jag cursed under his breath as he brought the claw craft back onto the fighter's tail. Before he could line up another shot, two more fighters came at him from his port side, weapons blazing angrily at him. He sucked air through clenched teeth sharply and nosedived away from the incoming fire. Seconds later, when he had chance to look again for the X-Wing, he saw it fall apart in a blaze of fire beneath the Vasset's blasters. The two fighters he had just eluded were quickly back on his tail. With the rest of the squadron engaged in the battle elsewhere, he knew that help wouldn't be coming anytime soon. He was going to have to make his own luck. Han was backing up, looking for the nearest exit. From below came the sound of screams as the crowd ran in a panic from the advancing aliens. Security guards opened fire on the Sea Ruvi warriors, who responded with blistering barrages from their paddle beamers. In leaps and bounds, propelled by powerful thigh and tail muscles, the Sea Rook soon overwhelmed the Bakuran troops. The Puek guards, who had originally protected the Kiramak from attack, turned out to be genuine Puek, unlike the disguised priests. They protected their leader behind a tight huddle, beamers at the ready. A tactical retreat might be called for, Jaina suggested to her parents. Jaina turned to find Gower standing at Tahiri's side. We need a way out of here.
The way we came, then.
The Rin pointed at the craterous hole in the stands.
It has to be safer than staying out in the open.
Jaina agreed, and together they began to gather up the confused rescue workers and spectators still milling about the area. She explained her intentions as best she could, asking them to trust her as she sent them down into the hole. There was little resistance from the people. In the absence of any other plan, most were more than happy to follow her instructions. Once everyone was in, Han and Leia were to go next, then wait for Gower to lower Tahiri into the hole on her gurney. Jaina and the Nogri guards would take up the rear to protect everyone's backs.
What about the Prime Minister?
One of the women asked as she went past Jaina.
What about him?
She shouted back over the rain. He's dead.
We can't leave his body here for the Fluties.
But... The protest died in her throat.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Leaving her parents to supervise the evacuation, she looked around for the stretcher on which she'd last seen the body. She found it tucked away behind an outcrop, covered in a body bag. If she could slave it to Tahiri's repulsor gurney, maybe they'd be able to take both of them out in tandem. The moment it got in her way, she told herself, then she would cut it loose. The living had to take priority over. Her thoughts stopped in mid-track as she went to move the stretcher. The body bag caught on a twisted seat and pulled away, revealing it to be empty. Her puzzlement was short-lived. Someone else must have had the same concerns and already taken the body to safety. She returned to the crater, where the last of the survivors was disappearing into the hole. Before she climbed back down into the hole, she cast her eyes up at the cloud-packed sky. May the Force be with you, Jag, she thought, wherever you are. Catching sight of the nearer of Bakura's two moons, Jag pulled his clawcraft up and away, aiming with full throttle toward it. He didn't need to look back to know the fighters were following. The space ahead of him was puffing with bright explosions from their misfired shots. He brought the clawcraft